Moncrief with Gas Networks Ireland. Aren't you tired of that ugly fuel storage tank, having to order and write that big check for the delivery guy? gasnetworks.ie/move to gas.
53106 is our text number. That will cost you 30 cent. Time to look at some stories from some other parts of the world. Jonathan De Burka Butler joins us once again. Good afternoon,
John,
Jonathan.
How are you getting on?
To the Philippines we're going to first. President Duterte, as most people would know, has actively encouraged his citizens to go out and kill drug dealers. Does this now include his son?
Well, that's an interesting way of asking, framing that question, actually. Yeah, it, as you said, Duterte's been there since June of last year. Famous because he ran on a policy of having cleaned up the city he was mayor of, Davao, in a sort of using means that were probably non-standard. Mm. He's now taken that to the Philippines and it's causing a lot of controversy. So we reckon about 3,800 suspects, okay, have been killed by police. Now, the police in the Philippines, the police are basically saying that they do this in self-defense when they go in and try and, you know, break up deals or whatever. But there's a lot of suspicion around it. And there is, for him, a lot of suspicion around his son, a man by the name of Paolo Duterte, who also happens to be the second in command in that city of Davao. Okay, so he's, you know, vice mayor, if you like. Mm. And there's at the moment, there is a Senate inquiry going on around Duterte and that is Paolo Duterte and Manassas Carpio, who is married to Rodrigo Duterte's, President Duterte's daughter, Sarah. The crux of this inquiry is that they're rumoured to be involved in the shipment of crystal meth worth $125 million from China into the Philippines. Now, it's thought that Paolo Duterte, the son, has been advised by his father, the president, to go into this inquiry, answer their questions and come back out again. Mm. And that's specifically what he's done. Now, the evidence that is against the son, there's two pieces, and they're relatively thin, to be honest with you. One is that a customs officer heard his name mentioned,
okay,
in connection with this shipment. And the second piece of evidence, which was presented in this Senate inquiry, was that a photograph was taken of him talking to the businessman who is alleged to be behind this shipment.
Okay, it's not it's not shutting, it's not case closed,
yeah,
really.
Yeah, yeah, indeed it's not. And then they're also latching on to this other piece of evidence, which is a tattoo that he has on his back, apparently, which he's refusing to show. But prosecutors, or at least not prosecutors, because, sorry, it hasn't got to that stage yet. But the people running the Senate inquiry are saying that this, you know, shows that he's involved in some sort of international drug cartel. And he's refusing, as I said, to show this particular tattoo.
Mm. Now, the Senate committee, would they perhaps have a vested interest in embarrassing the president?
Yeah, it's a very interesting Senate, actually, I have to say. There's only 25 members in it. And it's very much made. So the biggest party in it, which is not actually Duterte's party, only have 5 seats. So that'll tell you it's made up of many, you know, many different parties. And he does have enemies, there's no doubt about it, in the Philippines. They don't like the way he does things, and there are people out to get him. Of course, he's using that to say to the people that all of this stuff is politically motivated. And I think probably what he's trying to do here is he's trying to get his son to go in front of this Senate inquiry. It doesn't necessarily have any powers to prosecute. It can only advise. And if this passes over, then, you know, the police, who he has in his pocket anyway,
they're
not going
to
do anything about this. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, the Solomon Islands we're going to next. And this is an incident to do with sorcery or alleged sorcery.
Yeah, so we believe. And I don't know, we don't know that much about it other than what happened. That sounds a bit strange. But an Anglican brother was shot with an arrow on an island there. Now, this is a place that is a couple of thousand kilometres, I think, to the east of Papua New Guinea. And we know quite a bit of Papua New Guinea and how they like to hold on to their unique culture, shall we say. And the same is true of the Solomon Islands. Now, this happened in an island called Makira. It's population of about 40,000. Most of it is made up of highlands that run through the middle of it. And it's about the size of Antrim. All right. So, you can sort of imagine what kind of a place it is. And up in these highlands, you've still got tribes who are into these various different cults. Now, the only thing that the police know, or the only thing that the police think, is that a member of one of these cults, a cult called Platform, we don't know what they do or what they stand for.
It's not a great name for a cult, really.
Yeah, indeed. Came down and some sort of dispute occurred, and it resulted in this Anglican brother being shot with an arrow.
Right.
He's recovering, but the police haven't arrested anybody yet, and instead they've asked leaders of the group to come forward and discuss the incident.
Okay.
So we'll see how that pans out.
And I don't quite get where does sorcery come into it?
Well, it's just that it's suspected that there has been a few instances of sorcery and witchcraft in the region recently. So last month, I think 20 men were arrested for going into a village, and they blamed a woman for the death of a teacher in their village, and they were looking for compensation. They didn't get it, so they burnt down a few houses and took away a few live chickens. So it's thought that there's been a sort of an ongoing pattern of witchcraft and sorcery in the area, and that somehow this cult might be connected to it.
Yeah, but it seems to be when there's a suspicion of witchcraft or sorcery, it leads to violence.
Yes, absolutely. And we know that from Papua New Guinea as well, in fact, which, you know, culturally wouldn't be too different from this place, I think.
Right, Australia we're going to next, and Malcolm Turnbull is getting into some trouble because of a photograph at a football game.
Yeah, I'm not 100% sure why I included this, but I did, because I thought it was a sign of the times, maybe, I don't know. He was at a football match, he took a photo was taken of him holding his daughter, babe in arms, and a plastic cup of beer in the other hand. He posted and he said, "Multitasking at the footy." This was at an Aussie rules game, and that was grand, but there was a storm over it. People started commenting on Facebook and Twitter, saying that it was disgraceful holding a child with alcohol in hand. But then it quickly turned into people defending him, even his arch nemesis Bill Shorten, who's as you know, the opposition leader, weighed in behind him and said that this was pathetic to be attacking this man. Leave him alone, he's just been a grandfather. It all kind of blew over by Monday, but the media latched on to it, you see, and they were leading with front pages, saying, you know, that some were saying, oh, it's a minor storm, and others were saying, oh, it's a huge backlash.
And that's a slow news day in Australia, really.
Absolutely.
But to be clear, he wasn't feeding the baby beer. He was just holding a cup of beer himself.
Yeah, and he had a beer, and that was it. And somebody pointed out and said, would you have said the same about a cup of tea, which arguably was more dangerous in many ways.
That is true. Mm. Yeah, if you spill the tea on them. Right, Colombia we're going to now. And so tell us about the Gulf Clan. Who are they?
Yeah, very interesting bunch. They are based mainly in Aruba, which is a good place to be a drugs cartel, I suppose. It's right at the neck between Panama and Colombia. So you can get to the Caribbean from there, and then you can get back over to the Pacific, and then up through the Central America and that kind of thing as well. Anyway, they've been on the go since about 2001, and they're responsible for 70% of cocaine exports. Okay,
crikey.
They're big. Okay, yeah. Very big. They have about 3,000 members. But in the last 2 years, the government of Juan Manuel Santos, who's soon going to be beatified, I'm fairly sure, has managed to crack down on this crowd, and they've arrested about 1,500 of them who are in prison, have been charged, or are waiting to be convicted. So the leader of the group, a man by the name of Otoniel, has decided that he's had enough, and he says that he's ready to surrender. Now, this comes a couple of weeks after FARC had their first Ordesh, or whatever you want to call it, and have decided to go political.
Yeah.
That ELN, the other big Marxist group there, have decided that they are going to get involved in a 100-day-long truce to explore peace talks. And now one of the biggest drugs cartels have decided they've had enough, and they're handing themselves in. So it looks great for Santos.
The Gulf Clan, though, did they have any political aspect to them, or are they just basically a drugs outfit?
You see, that's the thing. From reading a bit about them, I think that they might have been involved a little bit with FARC and some militants. Now, the Gulf Clan were in fact a right-wing faction that were involved in the Civil War, but then they broke from that, or their official group broke from that in 2006, and other people carried on. So that's what kind of got me thinking. Is the crackdown on this group meant as an example to any, you know, former FARC members who might think that they can carry on, you know, dealing drugs or whatever? Or is it, you know, why now? I mean, there is a 5 million bounty on this man's head as well. And when you think about it, there are a lot of ex-military men who are at home now playing Nintendo, looking for something to do, and 5 million quid to go and shoot this guy wouldn't be a bad return.
Okay. But I suppose one could suspect that perhaps there had been some sort of back-channel discussions. Maybe they're going to be lenient, or maybe even clemency.
On the face of it, he said that President Santos has said that they will be treated as criminals. They won't get special treatment, but he said the law might give them some privileges.
Okay.
Depending on what they deliver. I should also say that the second in command, a guy known as the Hawk, was killed by police about a month ago. So that might be a bit of an incentive as well.
Right.
They're being caught.
Of course, the thing is that, you know, if the Gulf clan disappears, will somebody else go? There's millions to be made from exporting drugs. So
undoubtedly.
It doesn't necessarily mean the cocaine will go away.
Yeah, undoubtedly. Yeah. But the only thing is that now that the Colombian, might seem simplistic, but now that the Colombian government have more free time to look after this kind of thing, because FARC are gone, maybe they'll have more success in cracking down it. But it's not going to stop people from trying, obviously.
Right, Iceland we're going to now, the land where you can't get arrested.
Well, you can, but you won't go to prison by the looks of it. Sounds like a great place. 560 people are waiting to go to prison in Iceland. And that's because of a shortage of prison wardens, apparently. The parliament won't hire anymore. I don't know why, but that's what Pál Winkle, the director of prisons in Iceland, is saying. That's what he's saying they need. And as a result, 560 people can't get into prison. And it's an extraordinary thing, because if more than 5 years pass, I don't know if we have anything similar here, after sentencing, without you starting your sentence, you get off scot-free.
Yeah.
Now, I don't know if that's scratched from your record. Presumably it isn't, just because you didn't serve the time.
Well, you've been convicted,
so yeah. So there you go. But you won't necessarily serve the time.
How interesting is that? Right, Spain we're going to go to next, and more news about Catalan independence, or at least attempts at that.
Yeah, well, they're going for it, and that's for sure. They passed a secession bill on Thursday, which means that a referendum is going to go ahead on October the 4th. And in that secession bill, they also said that if a yes result is returned, that they're going to declare independence by the 4th of October, within 48 hours. Now, obviously, the Spanish Constitutional Court and the government are saying this is absolutely ridiculous. It's not going to go ahead. And the Spanish Constitutional Court, they submitted a challenge to that bill, obviously. But in that, they also warned the people who would be involved, so mayors, the first minister of the Catalan state, whatever you want to call it, and those people involved in the municipalities who are going to facilitate the plebiscite, they've warned them that they're going to get criminal charges brought against them. So that's more than 1,000 people. Now, as if to sort of tell the Spanish government that we're not listening to you, nearly 600 mayors have already signed up to have their facilities used for this vote to go ahead.
Have any said, rode in with the Spanish government and said, OK, we won't do it?
Well, that's interesting, because I know that, I mean, if we look at the statistics on it, or if we look at recent polls, it is about a 50-50 split. Now, the yes side see that they think that they have just a little bit more, but the no side are saying, well, you know, it's too close to call. And there have been many people who are against it who are calling on the Spanish government, in fact, to protect their constitutional rights. I mean, that's the big thing that they're going for.
If it's a yes vote, though, won't it have interesting ramifications for all sorts of political situations around Europe?
Indeed.
Right, Kazakhstan is to expel dozens of Indian workers. Why?
Yeah, there was there's an Abu Dhabi Plaza high-rise tower project that's been built in the capital Astana. One of the construction workers who happened to come from India was leaving the construction site, and the security stopped him from leaving because they thought he was drunk. And his fellow countrymen came to his aid, and a fight ensued. So it was a big brawl. Riot police were called in to separate the various different people who were fighting. And 61 Indian construction workers are now going to be deported for their part in that particular brawl. So no messing in Astana. And they wouldn't be known for tolerating this kind of thing, and they aren't.
Right, okay, well, that's our time up. Very briefly, Jonathan, tell us about what to look out for in the next week or so.
Yeah, well, again, we were talking about Colombia and the Pope is coming there on Wednesday. So again, that's more of a fillip for Mr. Santos. Juncker is going to Jean-Claude Juncker, isn't it, to deliver his State of the Union address to the EU Parliament, and then London Fashion Week starts on Friday.
Okay, maybe Jim Carrey will turn up. Jonathan, thanks very much for talking with us today.
Moncrief with Gas Networks Ireland. Aren't you tired of that ugly fuel storage tank, having to order and write that big check for the delivery guy? gasnetworks.ie/movetogas.
We're going to take a break, back in a couple of minutes.